Today, I'll be speaking with Frank Barnaby, a nuclear scientist by training. He worked at the Atomic Weapons Research Establishment in Britain and was director of the Stockholm International Peace Research Institute from 1971 to 1981. He currently works for the Oxford Research Group on research into military technology, nuclear energy, and the terrorist use of weapons of mass destruction. And he is author of the book, How to Build a Nuclear Bomb and Other Weapons of Mass Destruction. Welcome, Mr. Frank Barnaby. My first question is, for what purpose did you write this book?
Well, just to inform the public about the ease with which the nuclear weapons can be produced, and also chemical and biological weapons, so they're informed about that. I think the public have the right to know the risks they face.
Is one reason for the proliferation of WMDs the willingness of corporations in the West to sell the technology and materials necessary to build them, along with the unwillingness of nations to stop those corporations?
There is an element of that, but we have a paradox, because the Non-Proliferation Treaty, which in the nuclear field is designed to prevent the proliferation of nuclear weapons, also in Article 4 gives the non-nuclear countries the right to acquire civil nuclear technology, and the nuclear weapon powers are obliged to provide assistance in acquiring that nuclear technology. But civil nuclear technology is exactly the same as the technology you need for military purposes. So the treaty does two things. It is meant to stop the proliferation, but on the other hand, it encourages the acquisition of technologies that can give rise to proliferation, and this seems to me to be incompatible.
Please explain how the U.S. and the EU can improve its counterterrorism measures to stop the spread of weapons.
A number of crucial things. Firstly, countries should try and prevent the spread of materials which terrorists would need to produce chemical, biological, or nuclear weapons. I mean, there are obvious chemicals involved. There are obvious biological materials like anthrax and so on. And there are obvious nuclear materials like plutonium and highly enriched uranium. Well, I think that there should be great efforts made to prevent those things being traded or acquired by terrorist groups, and that isn't really being done at the moment. The most important counterterrorism activity, however, is intelligence. And this really means human intelligence. In other words, to infiltrate into terrorist groups agents which will then observe what they're doing and report on it. Well, that, of course, is an exceedingly difficult thing to do, because terrorist groups are often small and they're in cells very often, and each member of the cell knows every other member intimately, and therefore it's extremely difficult to infiltrate them. So it's not really very easy to put into practice effective countermeasures, and therefore I think we have to accept that and be prepared to cope with a terrorist attack when it comes. Try and prevent it, but certainly have the measures of coping with it if it happens.
By the U.S. and the U.K. announcing in 2002 that they reserve the right to use nuclear weapons first, and the U.S. setting military bases throughout Central Asia, aren't we creating a climate where nations like North Korea, Iran, China, or Russia may be unwilling or even hostile to assisting the U.S. and Europe in preventing future attacks?
Yes, I do believe that. I don't think that the military policy of the United States or Britain, for example, is very effective in stopping terrorism. I mean, as you say, as we've seen in Iraq, it can actually encourage it. So I think we need to look at other measures rather than military ones for containing it.
Has the U.S. support of counterinsurgents in the Philippines and our support of Israel a sign that the U.S. is distracted from the goal of preventing future terrorist attacks?
Yes, I do. I think particularly the activities of Israel, and therefore support of Israel, is particularly likely to increase terrorism. I mean, Israel does have a difficult situation, of course, but I think that they should be encouraged to go for the two-state solution with Palestine and to stop expanding the settlements in the West Bank and removing those that are there. Unless Israel is encouraged to do this thing soon, I think the situation will get increasingly bad, and it may eventually get out of control. So I would put high stock on controlling Israel's activities in the West Bank and Gaza.
What effect could the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty, the Biological and Toxin Weapons Convention, and the Chemical Weapons Convention have on reducing our risk of attack?
Well, if they were made effective, they would help. I'm not sure that they would completely solve the problem. The problem at the moment is that they all have great weaknesses. Until those weaknesses are removed, they're not effective, and I think we should make every effort to do it. Unfortunately, of course, the U.S. government is very keen on all of these treaties, doesn't like them, and is therefore not willing to strengthen them. I think that is a problem.
Could you be more specific on what weaknesses the treaties have?
Well, I've already mentioned one. The weakness is that the treaty encourages the spread of civil nuclear technology, and it's just that technology that can be used to produce nuclear weapons, so that is a major weakness. The other weakness, of course, is that the nuclear weapon powers, all of them, are not fulfilling their obligations under Article 6 to reduce to move towards nuclear disarmament. So far as the chemical weapon treaty goes, the inspection mechanisms should be strengthened, and the same thing applies even more so to the Biological Convention.
What are the motivations for countries to pursue nuclear, biological, or chemical weapons?
Well, as far as nuclear is concerned, prestige is an obvious one. Some of them, of course, do have genuine security problems. I mean, Israel will be one of those, maybe India, Pakistan too. India vis-a-vis China, and Pakistan vis-a-vis India. So those are, I think, the two major reasons. There are also domestic political reasons. Countries facing domestic political unrest can get the support of their populations by developing nuclear weapons. So I think those are the main reasons.
How did North Korea or Iraq go about building their nuclear programs?
North Korea went for plutonium as a fissile material. Iraq went for highly enriched uranium. And it turns out that North Korea found the plutonium route relatively more straightforward than Iraq found the highly enriched uranium route. I think that has to be true, that if you want nuclear weapons, it is better to acquire a small nuclear reactor and produce plutonium for your nuclear weapons and go to the considerable trouble of enriching uranium to the extent you need to enrich it for nuclear weapons. So I think those are the two. That's the major problem. It's a choice of fissile material.
By what methods do you enrich uranium?
So far as highly enriched uranium goes, in this day and age, there are two feasible technologies or sensible technologies. One is the use of gas centrifuges, the other the use of lasers to separate isotopes. The centrifuge method is extremely expensive. It's an industrial-scale plant, and it uses a lot of electrical energy. A laser is much less energy-intensive and therefore cheaper. So on the face of it, lasers are better, but gas centrifuges seem to be the method of choice for Iraq and, it seems, Iran. So I think that's the situation.
What is the likely level of development of Iran's nuclear weapons program?
Well, Iran seems to have mastered the production of gas centrifuges, so it's a matter of producing the several thousand they need to produce significant amounts of highly enriched uranium for nuclear weapons. They've experimented with lasers, but they seem to have dropped that. So it just depends on how active they are in gas centrifuge production. They're also, which is rather difficult, they're also producing a heavy water reactor, which would be very effective in producing plutonium. So they seem to be trying both routes, the plutonium route through their heavy water reactor and highly enriched uranium through the gas centrifuge. So I suppose time would tell which one they decide to fully develop, but it would take them a long time. This is not something they're going to be able to do in a short time. We're talking years rather than months.
Before the inspectors stopped them, what was the level of development on Iraq's chemical and biological weapons programs?
Well, we don't know. I mean they certainly historically have shown that they're able to produce chemical weapons, particularly sarin, the nerve agent, and mustard gas, and so on. And biological weapons, once again, they were able to produce anthrax in suitable form and weaponize it. So they'd mastered the technique, but they hadn't produced many munitions, in fact, hardly any. and probably not a very effective delivery system. So, I mean, they had, they were able to do it, but they didn't. They hadn't done it, so to speak. It seems as though it stopped in the early 1990s.
I remember reading in your book that South Africa had a nuclear weapons program. Why would South Africa just stop it? What verification do we have that they've done this?
Well, South Africa did produce six nuclear weapons using highly enriched uranium, possibly seven, and they stopped, de Klerk stopped the program before handing over, or before starting the mechanism for handing over to a black government. And so the suspicion is that the white government didn't want the black government to have nuclear weapons. I imagine that's the reason, but there's no way of proving that.
And I also remember reading that there was some sort of explosion off the coast of South Africa that many believe was a test of some sort of weapon system.
Yeah, there may well have been an Israeli or a South African weapon. The point was that it's known that there were warships, South African warships in the area, and the American Vela satellite detected a signal that the operators of the satellites are convinced with a nuclear weapon. On the other hand, President Carter put up a committee to investigate this, and that committee came to the conclusion that the evidence for a nuclear weapon wasn't very convincing. On the other hand, the committee didn't look into all the available evidence, and the Los Alamos people that operate these Vela satellites insist that it was, so we don't know for certain. I think on balance, it probably was a nuclear explosion, and probably an Israeli one.
Which organization is more likely to use WMDs, a nation-state or a terrorist group?
Well, if it's a case of using nuclear weapons, I think it's more likely to be a terrorist group. I think countries like North Korea and Iran may develop nuclear weapons because they feel under threat. Once they develop them, I doubt if very much that they would use them, except in extremists, whereas the terrorist group develops them, then they're going to use them.
What type of weapon would a terrorist group prefer to use?
The nuclear ones they would prefer because of their Armageddon nature, and they're so destructive that the fundamentalist terrorist groups whose aim is the maximum killing rather have nuclear weapons. They're the most effective at killing people.
Because of the difference in motivation between states and terrorist groups, is there a difference in the level of sophistication that these weapons would have to have?
Yes, they do. I mean, you can't compare the two. A terrorist group would be satisfied with a very primitive nuclear explosive. If it went off with an explosive power equivalent to a few tens or 200 or 300 tons of TNT, that would be enough for their purposes. Whereas the military require very reliable yields and very predictable ones. So they're quite different weapons.
Besides Al-Qaeda, what other terrorist groups around the world should the public be more cognizant of?
It's impossible to give a list of them. We just don't know. I mean, Al-Qaeda isn't a terrorist group. It's an idea of which some terrorist groups are sympathetic to, and they're called Al-Qaeda, but there really isn't a specific group with a leader and an organization which can be called Al-Qaeda. It's a loose union of a number of groups, but all with the idea of fundamentalism.
By what means could a terrorist group acquire fissile materials?
Well, they could either get them by stealing them. Smugglers would maybe smuggle them, buying them on the black market, or getting them from a sympathetic government.
How could a terrorist group build a biological weapon, and what kind of organism would they use?
Well, you can get botulinum from the earth, the soil in your garden, and then you can culture it. That's one possibility. The terrorist group, I think, would prefer to go for anthrax, and that you can get that from countries in which the animals have anthrax, for example. So there really isn't a major problem in getting hold of lethal or very damaging biological material.
How could a terrorist group build a chemical weapon, and what ingredients would they use?
Well, sarin is the obvious one of choice, I would think, or tabun, the nerve agent. And the formula, the method of preparing those is in the open literature, so once again, that's not very difficult for a competent chemist.
What action do you want your readers to take after reading your book?
Well, I think one should try and encourage the government to take adequate counter-terrorism measures to prepare to cope with a terrorist attack, and should try and remove the causes of terrorism, which poverty, injustice, and so on. So those are the, I think, the obvious measures against to be taken.
I have been speaking with nuclear scientist Frank Barnaby. He worked at the Atomic Weapons Research Establishment in Britain and was director of the Stockholm International Peace Research Institute from 1971 to 1981. He currently works for the Oxford Research Group on research into military technology, nuclear energy, and the terrorist use of weapons of mass destruction. And he is author of the book, How to Build a Nuclear Bomb and Other Weapons of Mass Destruction. For the Sunday Monitor, I'm Byron Jackson.